Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. We started out fast. It's the Breaking It Down podcast hosted by yours truly, Mark Mancini, live in Los Angeles. It's sponsored by Curry Up Cafe. Say hi to Chef Wongi. 21912 Ventura Boulevard, 818-347-4116. I love Curry Up. Well, we're going 30 minutes, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. This is a great guest coming in, former Major League Baseball player, played 10 years plus, a left-hander, Ed Vosburgh. And Ed, first of all, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I had a few health issues last week. I missed seeing you, but I feel really good, and I'm excited. Baseball's going to be starting soon. It's exciting.
Well, prayers and thoughts are with you. You're a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, what's your best contact?
Well, I work at a great place in Tucson. It's called DBAT, D-B-A-T. It's a chain of indoor facilities all around the country. I love working with kids. That's my passion. I work with kids, adults. I work with young girls. I just try to instill the love of baseball to these kids and softball, and I'm excited. It gets me up every day, and I really feel like I really want to give something back to the kids, just like when some people gave to me as a youngster. So it's exciting. I'm still involved in the game, and I still love it.
Yeah, and not only that, talking in the pre-chat, we're discussing our age. Less than 2 months separate us, born the same year. You know, I feel good at 61. I'm sure you feel the same, and as we approach 62, but keep yourself active, keep yourself in shape. That's all you can ask.
That's very true, my friend. You know, I'm fortunate. Like I said, I throw the baseball a lot still. I feel like my arm feels phenomenal. The rest of my body some days feels like I'm 61, but for the most part, working with these kids like I do, it really keeps me young, and I just feel like, you know, I had one of those arms that I could throw the ball a lot, and I didn't have many problems along the way, so I felt very blessed to. I had one surgery, but a little blip on the radar, but I came back from that at age 39, and I still feel really good to this day. I feel very lucky.
Well, not only that, they always say the quickest way to the majors is being a left-handed pitcher, and boy, you can hang a star on that one. Now I'm borrowing something from Jerry Coleman, the old San Diego Padres broadcaster, but, you know, when you look at, you know, to get to the baseball bigs, that had to be something, knowing that that's the quickest way to get there.
You know, it is, and I heard that a lot, and Mark, and it is true, but you do have to produce. I unfortunately came up with an organization like the Padres who had Jack McKeon as a manager, and he really didn't believe that young guys were the answer. He would go out and get veterans. He was the guy that traded away Ozzie Guillen and got, you know, Lamar Hoyt. So he got rid of a lot of young players, didn't give a lot of young players the opportunity that they deserve, like a Shane Mack. I came up with Shane Mack.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always believed in my heart that I belong there. And unfortunately for me, I made it when I was in my 30s and not in my 20s. But I stuck around, and I always believed I had what it took to make it. And I am actually writing my life story now, and just to try to inspire kids that there are going to be obstacles in our way, and we can't let them stop, the obstacles stop us from reaching our dreams. So we got to keep plugging away. And, you know, if you have a dream and you really work at it and believe in yourself, you have a chance to achieve anything.
Dream it, do it. And that's the thing. And when you look at, you know, a lot of people today, I think what ends up happening is they try to, you know, run before they walk. And you can't do that. You got to put the time in. But the other thing is, is they look at the goal and they focus on the goal so much they don't realize it's the journey that gets you to the goal. It's the peaks and valleys. It's the persistence. It's the dedication. It's the drive. All those words, to get to where you want to be, are those the same words that it was installed in you at an early age to keep you on this path?
You know, you brought up a great point, and yes, and the answer is yes to that. I was fortunate. I just had my little league coach of our all-star team, Ralph Lanick. He just passed away. This year is 50 years that our little league team went to the World Series, and we ended up losing in the finals to Taiwan. But Ralph told me a long time ago, he's the first one I really give credit to, because he told me that I had this talent that could get me really where I wanted to go. And his words were, you have this ability, son, but it's going to be up to you. It's going to be tough along the way. But you're right. The journey is really where it's at. And, you know, I got to the big leagues at 24 for a short time, and I thought, oh, my goodness. I thought, I'm here to stay. Well, getting to the big leagues is one thing. Staying there is a lot more difficult. And so I bounced around and ended up going to Italy and playing there 1 year. But it really made the end for me sweeter, because I made it in my 30s, like I said. And I appreciated it more because I was older and I really had to really work and not give up to get really where I wanted to go.
Well, that had to be an experience, riding around in a Vespa, eating pasta, and playing baseball in Italy.
It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. I really thought it was the end for me. You know, it was 1992, and, you know, I'd been in the big leagues the year before, and actually 2 years before that, I got released by the Angels and the Mariners, and I really truly believe everything happens for a reason. I went to Italy to get my love back that I had lost for the game. And I met a really great person down there, Oscar Suarez, who ended up becoming my agent. And, you know, we are still friends to this day, and he helped me out a great deal. He believed in me, and you know, that's what it takes. It takes someone that believes in you, because your self-belief can only get you so far. But, you know, life is a journey, and it has ups and downs, but that's really what makes it. The journey, what it is, and I'm so blessed to be able to work with kids now, help them out as much as I can. When I see a kid improving and I see the sparkle and the light in his eye, that's really what makes it worthwhile for me.
Yeah, and let's go through the list of teams you played for, because I think, wow, you can reflect on everything you did in those cities and the fan support, the ball clubs and everything. The San Diego Padres opened up a door, and they're kind of special in my heart. Started radio in San Diego when Caminiti and all those guys, Finley, were down there and everything. So, you know, when I think of how I started radio 18, 19 years ago, San Diego is a special place in my heart. How special was it for you to be a part of the Padres?
You know, it was very special. I made my first friend in baseball was Kevin Towers. We became teammates when we were in Class A ball in Reno in the California League. He was my first friend. He welcomed me with open arms. We became friends for life, and Kevin was a great pitcher, and we were just talking about that. He passed away a few years ago, yeah. Broke my heart. He was one of the funniest people to be around. And I miss him. I miss him because he was just a joy. And you know, Bruce Bochy was another gentleman that I played with. His last year he ever played as a player in 1988. He was a backup catcher to Sandy Alomar, and Sandy ended up getting hurt. Bruce ended up catching, and we ended up winning the PCL. And, you know, Bruce, you know, I'm excited for him. He just took the job to be the Texas Rangers manager, and he's a delight. He's another funny, funny guy. A lot of really great personalities in the game. And, you know, Bruce is definitely one of the funniest people that I was able to play for and with.
Yeah. And then on to the San Francisco Giants. A lot of tradition there. I mean, when you first get there, you're probably looking at, you know, the Willie McCovey statues and all this stuff and the days of Juan Marichal and Barry Bonds and all that. How was the experience in San Francisco?
You know, it's great that you brought that up. San Francisco, the Giants were always my team when I was a kid. I love Willie Mays. I was a pitcher and an outfielder, and Willie Mays was my idol, and I always loved, got a chance to meet Willie, got a chance to play against Barry, of course. But the Giants were a really a great opportunity, a big thrill to play in Candlestick. Dusty Baker was one of the coaches. He was one of my favorite people that I met along the way. I always knew that Dusty was just this incredible people person, and I was so thrilled for him to win the World Series this past year. He had never been able to win it as a manager, and I was excited for him because they don't get really much better than people like Dusty. But I got a chance to play with some great people. Gary Carter was a teammate of mine in San Francisco. I loved Gary, the kid. He called himself the kid, and before Ken Griffey had become the kid. But, yeah, great personalities, Will Clark, Matt Williams. I've got a chance to play with Brett Butler. I always loved Brett Butler. So I made a lot of good friends in San Francisco.
Florida Marlins, and I've always said Florida, it's always been a head-scratcher to me, thinking warm weather, how come this city can't seem to draw big Cuban community down there? But the Marlins have always had a problem drawing fans. How was it down there? I mean, the team has won a couple World Series, but the sparse crowds, and now they've got a new stadium there. What was it like to be a part of the Marlins?
You know, it was phenomenal. It was a thrill. I'd never forget this. I was in Boston with the Texas Rangers, and there was a rumor that, you know, I might get traded. The deadline came and passed, and I was a little disappointed because we were not playing really well in Texas. We weren't going to make the playoffs. And then I remember getting a phone call from Doug Melvin, who was my manager. He said, listen, you just got traded to the Florida Marlins. So I was really excited. I ended up flying into Houston, joined the team there, and you know, it was a great, great group of guys. I loved the Marlin experience, obviously. Jim Leland was a phenomenal guy to play for.
Yeah.
We had Darren Dalton and Moises Alou and Edgar Renteria and Al Leiter. And, you know, and then we had, you know, just a great, great group of guys. And Charles Johnson was our catcher. And, you know, it was just, we ended up becoming a wild card team. And, you know, I think one of the reasons the Marlins have, you know, trouble drawing is because everybody's from somewhere else in Florida. You know, it's kind of like Arizona. Nobody's from the Florida area. People move there. So they really don't have that loyalty built in like, say, the Phillies do or the Eagles or the, you know, the Mets or whoever, the Yankees. Look at the Yankees and the Cubs. But, you know, the Florida experience was – you know, it was great. It ended up being one of the great World Series that ended up going seven games. I'll never forget warming up in the last inning. It went extra innings, and I was going to be the next pitcher in the game if Edgar Renteria didn't get that hit. So I just remember warming up and thinking, I was just praying that Edgar would get that hit. I wanted to pitch, yet I didn't really want to have that pressure on me, but I was so thankful when I saw that ball he hit up the middle off of Charles Nagy's glove for the game winner.
Yeah, and you know, what people don't understand, and this is where I like to get in depth and open it up, because you get in the trenches when you're interviewing somebody. You know, a lot of people, whether it's playing fantasy sports or anything, traded, who got traded here, how tough is that if you have a family? Even if you're single, you're on a road trip, you live in one city, and all of a sudden you're traded to another city like you were alluding to, that's going to be tough. Now you don't even go back to your other city where you got all your clothes, you got to buy stuff. I know people are helping you, but how tough is a transaction, Ed, getting traded?
You know, it is. It's really, really difficult, and I'm thinking about, you know, I'm a Phoenix Suns fan, and I was thinking about Cam Johnson and, you know, Mikal Bridges getting traded to the New Jersey or to the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm thinking, you know, I love my Phoenix Suns. I've been a fan of my whole life. And, you know, I was kind of hoping that we wouldn't make any deals and that we could, you know, because the Suns have a good team. You know, Devin Booker's coming back. But getting back to the trade, Mark, I got traded 5 times in my career, and each time I was very fortunate in the regard that I went from team that wasn't very good to a team that was better. So each time I got traded, I went to a better situation. For example, after the Marlins won the World Series, Kevin Towers is another funny story, but Kevin comes up to me. He was the general manager of the Padres, and we were playing the Padres when I was in Florida, and he comes up to me and says, "Hey, what do you think about coming back to San Diego, which is where we both started?" And I said, "Seriously?" He goes, "Yeah, I would love to have you come back." And so he ended up getting me traded after the World Series with the Florida Marlins back to the Padres. And the Padres ended up going to the World Series the very next year. We ended up losing to the Yankees. That's the year that the Yankees won all those games, like 125 games. But, you know, so each time I did get traded, I went to a better situation as far as the team went. But you're right, getting traded is not a lot of fun because you got to pick up your stuff, and you got stuff one place, and then you got to end up getting it to another place. So, but that's just part of the game, and you have to realize that, you know, nothing is for sure and nothing lasts forever, but just embrace everything along the way, which is really what I tried to do.
Yeah, don't hold it against me, but I'm a big Milwaukee Bucks fan, and I know we met in the finals a few years ago, so please don't hold that against me.
I love you. Matter of fact, I was watching the Laker-Milwaukee game last night, and that guy to me is the greatest player. He is a specimen.
Yeah.
But the thing I love about him the most is he is a humble guy. He is not full of himself. He could have left and went somewhere else, but he loves the people of Milwaukee, and, you know, and I was so thankful he stayed there. And I'm a Packer fan, so, you know, Milwaukee really reminds me a lot of the Packers because they have very, very loyal fans, and the Packers fans and the Milwaukee fans, they're very loyal. And you know, I was really happy that Giannis was able to win a championship. This year's going to be interesting in the NBA because – you know, it seems like there's been a lot of trades in the last couple of days, and the Bucks ended up getting Jay Crowder. So it'll be interesting. I'm real excited about the Phoenix Suns. I'm hoping that they can win it this year for the first time ever.
Yeah, well, not only that, you know, born in Pittsburgh, raised in Los Angeles, I always was intrigued with the Bucks going back to Jabbar and Danridge and McLaughlin. And it was funny, the other day I was wearing a old Milwaukee Bucks T-shirt, because I love them old T-shirts with the reindeer on it. But, a lot of memories, and even with the Moncrief days and coming up short with the Sixers and, you know, and now what they've become. And, yeah, it was nice to see the Greek Freak, and you're right, humbleness. You don't see it a lot these days, but it's nice to see it from a superstar like that. Hey, you know, talking about the other teams you played for, was there anything that stood out? We can go to the Diamondbacks, the Phillies. I love to see baseball get back to Montreal. I mean, I know hockey's a big thing there with the Canadiens, but that experience in itself had to be something. The city I've always been intrigued by and want to go there and get it off my bucket list. How was the experience in Montreal?
You know, Montreal was interesting. It was kind of bittersweet. I was only there for a few weeks. I loved playing for Frank Robinson, even though it was a short time. You know, it was one of my greatest accomplishments is I went to spring training with the Expos as a non-roster player. I was 40 years old. I didn't have much of a chance to make the team, but I made the team out of spring training. I pitched really well. Frank Robinson was very fair. You know, he kept me on the team, and then unfortunately, Jose Vidro was one of our infielders. He ended up getting hurt, so they ended up sending me out because I didn't do well, but just because they needed to bring another infielder in. But the Expos experience was an interesting one because that was my last major league team that I played with. I really enjoyed my time in Philly playing for Terry Francona. He was my manager.
Yeah.
He was my team. College, you know, we go way back, and you know, even though when I did play for Terry, we were not very good, and then the very next year, of course, Larry Boa became the manager because Terry got fired and then ended up going on to the Boston Red Sox, where he won a couple championships. But yeah, you know, getting a chance to play all these different places and seeing really who are the really true fans, like we were talking about. I love the fans in Wrigley and Chicago. They are great, loyal fans. And, you know, and they remind me of the Packer fans because they're just loyal. They travel. If you go to a Cubs game anywhere in the country as a visitor, you'll see all the people that just wear their Cubs stuff because they just have a great following. Even though, you know, the Cubs, for the most part, they had the championship a few years ago, but they haven't won that many. But they still have the most loyal fans, just like the Packers.
Well, and not only that, getting back to Francona, I had a chance to interview him down in San Diego. What a great guy. And, boy, I'll tell you, when we get a podcast going with you and myself, we got to get him on here, too, and some of the great guys that you have played with. You know, when you sit back and reflect on it, Ed, you can light up a stogie on this one. 1997 World Series champion with the Marlins. And then you represented the United States in baseball. That's a lot to sit back and reflect on, my friend.
It really was. And Terry called me and asked me to play on the USA team. We ended up going to Taiwan and playing. And that was a thrill because I got an opportunity to do that as a young guy. In 1981, I played on the USA summer team and played with great people like John Elway and some really, really great coaches, Mark Marcus, who was the coach at Stanford. And, you know, it was just a great thrill. We ended up beating Cuba in the Intercontinental Cup in Edmonton, Alberta. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to pitch against the Cubans. And, gosh, talk about a dynasty. I mean, I was thinking about Levon Hernandez. I couldn't come up with his name before. But he was one of the pitchers that the Marlins had, and he was very instrumental in, you know, the Marlins winning the championship in 1997. Levon was a young guy, but just had this incredible poise. And just, he was during the Marlins winning that championship in 97. But, yeah, I was fortunate enough to represent the USA a couple different times. And as a young guy, I have two jerseys that I really, really are very, very special to me. I have my Marlins jersey, whom I have framed from 97. And I also have my USA from 1981, I have those two jerseys framed, and they're very special to me. Representing my country really meant a lot to me.
Let me ask you, you know, playing Major League Baseball, and I'm going to present the question when I start my third year with the Pirates and Tarek Brock here. How many baseball caps do you guys go through per year? Is it a superstition thing? I know the relief pitchers. I mean, that's got to be unbelievable because I am so enamored by the way, and I've sat on those bullpen, you know, gates, you know, growing up and watching the fans lay down the garbage or lay down the smack. But how many hats do you guys go through a year? And in some cities, with the things being thrown over the heyday, did you have to go through it on a weekend?
You're right. It's funny because baseball players, I think, are probably the most superstitious of all athletes. I know that I have a funny story about wearing sleeves because I gave up a home run one day. I was pitching in Baltimore, and I faced Rafael Palmeiro, and he hit a home run off me, and I was wearing sleeves, and I told myself, I will never wear sleeves again. I never liked the way they felt on my arms. I didn't like being constricted, so giving up that home run to Palmeiro, I said, never wear sleeves again. And, you know, I pitched in the World Series in 97. It was 30 degrees out, and I didn't wear any sleeves. And, yes, it was cold. But, you know, baseball players are superstitious. And you know what? We go with what's hot. If we have a hat that we like, and no matter what it looks like, John Wetland used to have hats that used to look like they were 10 years old, and he used to sweat like nobody I've ever seen. But he would always have that same hat. And, you know, you'd see the sweat marks in it and but baseball, but there's no doubt about it. We are the most superstitious. You know, you hear all those stories about Wade Boggs and Larry Walker were very superstitious, but that's just part of the game. You really try to, if something's going really well, you don't want to change it. And then obviously if things change and turn, you want to get rid of everything.
Yeah, not only that, I remember playing hockey and I was a goalie. And we were on a winning streak. I wouldn't wash the jersey, and nobody could stand getting dressed next to me. But I'd talk to the goalpost and everything. They were your best friends. But, yeah, superstition things are remarkable. Hey, you know, in the last 5 minutes and some change, Arizona or Florida, is there a difference for spring training?
Oh, I know, God.
Arizona now over the years has picked up steam, picking more teams out of Florida. For a while there, it looked like it was one-sided with everybody in Florida. But any preference to play spring training, my friend?
Oh, my. Yeah, that's a fabulous question, Mark. And for me, being in Arizona, living in Tucson, I always loved Arizona. You know, Florida has a lot of, you know, facilities that are very spread apart. I think it was sad to me the days that we lost, because we used to have the Rockies and the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks and the White Sox shared a complex on the south side of Tucson. And they ended up leaving. We had the Rockies that were here for years. We had the three teams, and it was great. It was great for our economy in Tucson. And unfortunately, they left. They went to Phoenix. Phoenix is a phenomenal setup. You know, they have all those spring training facilities, and they're about 1 hour apart, which to me is not bad. You can go from Surprise or Goodyear or that side of town all the way to the other side of town where Scottsdale, where where the Diamondbacks share a complex with the Cardinals. And so, you know, or I'm sorry, the Rockies, they share a complex with the Rockies now, which is great. You know, a lot of these organizations, they share a complex. They have their own practice facilities, but they share the main stadium where they play these games. And these minor league spring training facilities are phenomenal. I grew up with the Padres. We were in Yuma, Arizona. You want to talk about a tough place because there's nothing in Yuma.
Yeah.
But the Padres, to their credit, they moved over to Peoria. They share the complex now with the Mariners. So that's really where it's at. You know, each these two organizations share the field. They have their own practice facility, and it really works. I just think Florida doesn't work because it's just too spread out. And like I said, Phoenix is so compact. And, you know, look at the Super Bowl. It's going to be in Phoenix this Sunday. And, you know, that place, they just are having the golf tournament there right now. Phoenix is really a great place for sports.
Yeah.
And I think they really have done a lot of things right. The football stadium is phenomenal. They play indoors. They have the hockey facility where the Coyotes play. Phoenix really is a great sports town.
Well, I'll tell you, with everything going on in Phoenix, you'll have the start of the World Baseball Classic there here next month, and a lot of good things. And you're right, the Coyotes are trying to get the new arena established for hockey. The Suns have been in the finals the last couple of years. So, you know, now we got to get the Diamondbacks to respectability and get the Cardinals, and then we've got everything. We'll have a duel in the desert, my friend.
You know, it's sad because the Diamondbacks, they got rid of Goldie. That was sad for me. Paul Goldschmidt's a great player, and I was sad that they traded him away. You know, the Diamondbacks, they played better last year, but you know, it'll be interesting baseball season. You know, the Padres are more relevant now. Look how great the Giants are in the Diamondbacks. That's a great division. You know, and you always have the Red Sox and the Yankees. I was very thankful to see for Aaron Judge to go back to New York. I would love to see him play. Looks like he's going to play his whole career there.
But
baseball has just got a lot of great traditions, and I'm really thankful to be part of it as long as I was. And I still really feel like I am a part of it, like I said, working with these young kids. And I feel like I've had a very blessed life, and I'm very, very thankful for that.
Well, we got to do this again, my friend. You're a brother, like I said to me, and we'll definitely get part two in this. Hey, as we wind this thing down, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you again, my friend.
Well, I if they go to DBAT Tucson, that's where I'm at. I spend a lot of my time there, and I'm, like I said, I'm very lucky to be still working with young kids. Young kids are our future, and I'm excited. I have a bunch of young kids that I'm working with that are really talented, and I'm excited for them. I really want to try to help them as much as I can along the way, just like people helped me along the way. So that's what, like I said, gets me up in the morning, and I'm very, very thrilled to be able to still be involved in the game. You know, America's pastime, as they used to say.
Giving back. That's Ed Vosburgh. Yours truly, Mark Mancini. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Thank you very much for everybody listening out there. We'll do this again. 60 feet, 6 inches. I'll be catching his fastball. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you, Mark.